Chapter 12. As you'll readily appreciate, all I wanted to do when we finally made it back to the refinery was eat, sleep, and grab a hot shower, preferably aboard the Pure of Heart while it was heading for deep space as fast as its engines would take it, but events were moving too fast to allow any such luxury. I managed to get rid of Sulla, who'd picked up my increasingly frantic attempts to contact the surface and been predictably unable to resist sticking her nose in by asking her to make sure Griffin and Margot got to the Medicaid as fast as possible, which didn't hurt my reputation for taking care of the troops either. Never a bad thing. And staggered off to meet Castine and Brocklaw. At least I'd been able to get a tactical update from Sulla before she went, so I could concentrate on the immediate problem, secure in the knowledge that the orcs were still being held at our outer defensive line and the Gargant was still too far away to open fire on us. For the time being, at any rate. "You look like hell," the Major said cheerfully as I entered the command post, but he held out a mug of Tanner leaf tea as he said it, so I let him live.
One. Kane is, of course, joking here. Probably.
"You should see me from this side," I told him, and dropped into a seat at the conference table. Now I was back in the warmth and relative safety of the refinery, all the fear and accumulated fatigue of the last day or so bludgeoned me between the shoulder blades, and it was all I could do to keep my head from dropping onto the glossy wooden surface. As I tilted my head back to try and ease the tension in my neck, something struck me as odd about the ceiling. "Merciful Emperor! Did the greenskins get in here?" Brocklaw followed the line of my gaze to the bolter holes filigreeing the plasterwork above his head. "Just a small crowd control problem," he said, smiling at some private joke. Well, if he wasn't too bothered about it, neither was I, and asking any more questions might complicate my life even further, so I returned my attention to the matter at hand. "You should get some rest," Castine said, looking at me with evident concern. I nodded. "I should. Just as soon as we've dealt with the current situation." I drank deeply, feeling the cobwebs lift a little from my mind as the tanner started to kick in. "Did you get the old survey reports I asked for?" "Right here." She skimmed a data slate across the surface of the table. I glanced at it, but the charts and technical data meant nothing to me. "Scrivener Quintus has been remarkably helpful." Brocklaw grinned and winked at me, but in my dazed state, I hadn't a clue what he was getting at. "What does it all mean in plain Gothic?" I asked. Castine shrugged. "I ran it by a couple of the engine seers in the transport pool. That had been a calculated risk. They were cogboys, of course, so their first duty would be to the Adeptus Mechanicus, but they were our cogboys and had fought alongside the rest of us for long enough to feel at least as loyal to the regiment as to their tech priest colleagues. So long as we didn't force them to pick sides, they'd tell us what we needed to know, or so I hoped. It's not really their field, but they seem to think you're right. There are other deposits of refinable ice on Simia Orichalcae much richer than this one." "Then why build the refinery here?" Brocklaw asked. I shrugged. "The Magos would undoubtedly reel off a dozen different reasons why this particular deposit was easiest to process, or the topography of the valley made construction simpler, or why it was the will of this clockwork emperor of theirs. He might even believe it himself. But if it smells like a sump rat, and it squeaks like a sump rat..." "Someone in the Adeptus Mechanicus knew that tomb was there," Brocklaw said. "Someone placed highly enough to make sure the mine was put on top of it."
One. The identification of those responsible for the decision wasn't difficult, but, as Kane surmised, hard evidence of conspiracy rather than an unfortunate coincidence continues to be elusive. Anyone with information which may prove helpful in resolving this matter will find an interested listener in Inquisitor Kuriakin of the Ordo Hereticus.
"But why?" Castine was aghast. "Surely they wouldn't be mad enough to think they could take on a planet full of Necrons." I thought of Logash, who'd been driven all but insane by the desire to examine such a rich cache of archaeotech, and tried to picture a cabal of high-ranking tech priests pulling strings to set up the mine over so tempting a prize. It wasn't hard to do at all. If they even suspected such a thing existed, they'd take any risk, however great, to get their sticky little mechadendrites on it. I'd learned that much at least from the Interitas Prime debacle. "They probably assumed the tomb was abandoned," I said. It wouldn't be the first time they'd made that mistake either, as I knew to my cost. "The real point," Brocklaw said, is how many of the tech priests here we can trust. Whether or not there was a conspiracy to start with, they all know what's down the bloody hole now. That much was true. If I'd had my wits about me, I'd have got Sulla to detain Logash as soon as she brought us back to the surface. But of course she ignored him. Only a civilian and a tech priest to boot, so by the time I realised what was going on, he'd already disappeared. No doubt filling Ernulf's head with visions of sorcerer's bounty unseen in millennia even as we spoke. None of them, I said. My head was hurting, the grim, relentless migraine that goes with utter fatigue, and I wasn't looking forward to the next few hours at all. I got through them, of course, due in no small part to Jürgen's skill at fending off unwanted interruptions. By the time Castine called a full meeting to discuss the situation, I'd managed to grab a little sleep, a lot of recaf, and a hot meal. Just Soylent's Viridians again, but for some reason I'd gone off the idea of retrieving an amble steak, and was beginning to feel tolerably human once more. A bath would have topped things off nicely, but sleep was even more urgent, and I just had to resign myself to the fact that I was probably beginning to smell as bad as my aide. Jürgen, naturally, looked no worse than usual, probably as a result of a catnap somewhere. He accompanied me, partly to underline my status, and partly to take the blame if my suspicions about my personal freshness were correct. Of course, I'd done a lot more than take care of my personal needs. Even before I staggered off to the mess hall and bed, in that order, I'd roused the refinery's resident astropath and sent the most urgently worded communique I could to both the Lord General's office and the rather more guarded channel as Amberley had suggested I use if I ever came across something which merited inquisitorial attention. Well, a tombful of Necrons definitely qualified, if anything did, but to my vague disappointment, though complete lack of surprise given the time lag inherent in even the most urgent interstellar communications, neither had responded by the time the briefing was scheduled to start. The conference room was the most crowded I'd ever seen it as I entered the command post, the babble of conflicting voices almost loud enough to drown out the muffled explosions from the battlefield beyond the large picture window. My eye was drawn to it at once, searching for some sign of the Gargant, and despite the ever-present snow swirling against the glass like a disconnected Pict screen, I was sure I could make out a dark, hulking shape against the mountains in the distance, which hadn't been there before. Merciful Emperor, it was almost close enough to open fire on us, a handful of kilometres distant now. I thought of the havoc the massive belly gun would surely wreak, blowing apart buildings and storage tanks alike, and shuddered. Of course, the Greenskins would be trying to take the installation relatively intact, or at least the vast reserves of refined Promethean it contained, so it couldn't really do its worst. But no one ever said orcs were rational.
1. Actually, there have been a few xenologists who argued precisely this, claiming their actions make perfect sense in the context of their own barbarous society. But such views are generally considered eccentric at best.
If the Orc Princeps, or whatever he called himself, got overexcited, this whole affair could end very loudly and suddenly.
2. He probably called himself some variation of knob or boss, which appear to be the only major signifiers of rank and status their language possesses.
Commissar, Colonel Castine looked up from her place at the head of the table and indicated a vacant seat next to her. I dropped into it gratefully, while Jürgen went to find me some more Tanner tea, and exchanged a nod of greeting with Brocklaw, who was seated on the other side of her. I'm pleased to see you looking so much better. Thank you, I said, as Jürgen materialised behind me with a large steaming bowl of the fragrant liquid. I glanced up and down the table, seeing all the faces I remembered from the previous meeting, and a lot more besides. Shall we get started? By all means. She nodded to Brocklaw, who cleared his throat loudly, and to my astonishment, everyone shut up and looked at him expectantly. "Thank you for coming at such short notice," he began, with barely a trace of sarcasm. "As most of you are no doubt aware, the Commissar's scouting trip has uncovered a much greater problem than the Orcs." At this point, he glanced meaningfully at the little knot of tech priests clustered around Ernulf. Logash was sitting next to him, still wearing the imbecilic grin he'd been sporting ever since we found him in the tomb below our feet. I'd invoked my commissarial privileges to unlock some highly classified files so that everyone who needed to would know precisely what we were up against. But now the seed of suspicion had been planted, it was hard not to wonder if the Magos had known most of it already. "How sure are we that it's a problem?" Ernolf asked, an edge of eager acquisitiveness in his voice. "If the Necrons are in stasis, we can surely concentrate our efforts of repelling the immediate threat." Meaning let the poor bloody guardsmen keep the orcs off their backs while he and his cronies pillage the tomb, of course. "They are the immediate threat," I said as mildly as I could. I sipped my bowl of tea while a sudden flare of apprehension in my gut at the very thought of those mechanical killers subsided. If we were up to our armpits in orcs, with a side order of Kroot and Eldar backing them up, I'd turn my back on the lot of them to take out a single Necron. I've fought them before, and they're the biggest single menace in the entire galaxy.
"Surely you exaggerate,"
Pryke said, looking at me sternly as though I was making the whole thing up.
"I've accessed the records of previous encounters with these, whatever they are, and reports of them are practically non-existent."
"That's because they hardly ever leave any survivors to report anything," I rejoined, feeling my hand begin to tremble as old memories came rushing back. A small gobbet of tea escaped the bowl to pool on the polished wooden tabletop, and Jürgen leant forward to mop up the spillage with a handkerchief that left the surface even grubbier than before. "Everything else in the galaxy fights for a reason, whether it's for territory, honour, or souls for the dark gods." I heard a satisfying intake of breath at that, having deliberately invoked the most shocking image I could think of to wrong-foot any objectors. "Necrons don't. They exist purely to kill. And they know we're here now."
"Are you sure about that?" Ernolf persisted. "They certainly know about the Greenskins. But you escaped unscathed, I gather."
He glanced at Logash for confirmation.
"The Omnisire guided our steps," the young tech priest declared, "so that we might claim the bounty prepared for us."
"The only preparation you'll get from the Necrons is if one of them fancies your skin as a waistcoat," I said, having the slight satisfaction of seeing him blench for a moment before his fanaticism kicked in again. "The Commissar is convinced that the party he encountered were simply scouts," Castine said, determined to keep the business of the meeting moving. "And while the warp portal remains active down there, we can expect a full-scale incursion at any time."
"What I don't understand," Morrell declared,
cutting through the subsequent babble of consternation,
"is why now? They've been down there for Emperor knows how long. What got them so stirred up all of a sudden?"
"I think I can answer that."
As everyone turned to look at him, Quintus cleared his throat a little nervously. "If you can make any sense of this mess, I'd like to hear it," Castine prompted after a moment. Quintus flushed even more and stood, grinning nervously at the Colonel. He produced a data slate from the recesses of his robes and projected a page onto the main hololith, which still jumped annoyingly as I tried to make sense of what I was looking at.
"These are the sensor logs from the traffic control system," he began, before Ernolf interrupted.
"Those are technical documents which fall under the purview of the Adeptus Mechanicus. You have no business dabbling in theological matters."
"I think you'll find," Pryke rejoined, equally forcefully, "that they are archive material and therefore clearly the responsibility of the Administratum."
"Their care and maintenance, possibly," Ernolf persisted. "But interpretation and consultation are the business of those appointed to commune with the numinous, not some jumped-up, inky-fingered quill-pusher."
Pryke seemed on the verge of responding in equally trenchant tones when Brocklaw cleared his throat again. The room went suddenly quiet.
"Might I remind everyone," Castine said mildly, "that I'm in charge here and I decide who does what. And I want to hear what the Scrivener has to say. Are there any objections?"
Surprisingly, there weren't, which might have had something to do with the way both officers had a hand resting casually on the butts of their bolt pistols. I began to suspect they'd been hanging around me a bit too much lately. She smiled at Quintus, who looked quite flustered for a moment, and nodded judiciously.
"Please continue."
"Ah, right, yes."
Quintus cleared his throat again and pointed to something in the middle of the display which looked like a stain of Ackenbury juice.
"This is the flare of warp energy released when the green-skinned space hulk emerged into the materium."
Ernolf harrumphed disapprovingly at the young scrivener's use of the technical term, and a faint, fleeting grin appeared on Quintus's face just long enough for me to realise he'd done it on purpose to irritate the Magos. and there was another one almost as strong when it dropped back into the warp. We already knew this, Ernolf said dismissively. Our instrumentation was practically overloaded. It's how we knew they were coming in the first place.
Precisely, Quintus said. And because of the strength of the flare, we missed that.
He pointed to something else with an air of triumph, undermined a little by the almost total inability of anyone else at the table to see what was hidden by his finger.
Could you magnify it a little? Castine asked.
Quintus flushed and complied, revealing another almost imperceptible Ackenbury stain. A murmur of voices rippled around the table, and Ernolf at least had the grace to look surprised.
We missed that, he admitted grudgingly.
Quite understandably, Castine assured him diplomatically. But can you tell us what it is?
I can guess, the Magos admitted reluctantly. Then he grimaced, as though biting into a bitterroot pasty someone had assured him was filled with sweetbriar, and gestured to Quintus to continue.
One. Cain was evidently still hungry at this point, judging by the sudden flurry of culinary metaphors. Hardly surprising, given the amount of energy he had expended over the last couple of days.
But I'm sure the young man has worked it out already. He seems quite bright for a bureaucrat, and we'd never have noticed this anomaly at all if it wasn't for his diligence.
I suppose for all his bluster, he was a fair-minded man, but it must have pained him to swallow his pride like that. His colleagues looked positively dyspeptic, and Pryke was gazing at him in open-mouthed astonishment. Castine just nodded coolly.
Thank you, Magos. I'm glad to see we all seem to be on the same side at last.
Quintus? For some reason, the young scrivener became flustered all over again as she looked in his direction and stuttered for a moment before resuming.
Well, it's outside my realm of expertise, as the Magos pointed out, but it seems logical to assume that the flare of warp energy somehow activated the dormant portal in the tomb.
Ernolf was nodding in agreement.
That would be my interpretation, he conceded.
Of course,
Logash butted in with the single-minded enthusiasm of the obsessive. That's how the Ambles got down there. They came through the portal and dug their way out of the tomb. That explains the anomalous habitat. He trailed off, suddenly conscious of how very much nobody else in the meeting cared.
And somehow the Necrons noticed that it had reactivated. Brocklaw nodded. So they sent a scouting party through. That makes sense.
But where from, though?
Pryke asked, anxious to establish that a department was fully involved in things.
Could be anywhere in the galaxy, I said. Somewhere with Ambles, by the look of it. But that doesn't narrow it down much.
One. Indeed not. As yet, the world, or worlds, at the other end of the Necron portal remain unidentified, despite the best efforts of the Ordo Xenos.
That's not really the question at the moment, Castine said, dragging everyone back to the point. What we need to decide now is what we do about them.
There's only one thing we can do, I said, as calmly and decisively as I could. Evacuate the planet while we still have enough time to get clear.
Evacuate? Castine echoed, clearly stunned. I nodded, conscious that I was risking my whole fraudulent reputation. But it was precisely that reputation for heroism which might just do the trick now. I adopted an expression of barely contained frustration.
I know how you feel. I've never run from a fight yet, which was not entirely true, of course, but no one needed to know that. And it goes against the grain to start now, but there are wider issues at stake here. The Necrons in that tomb outnumber us by hundreds to one. And that's assuming we can disengage from the orcs cleanly enough to take them on in a stand-up fight.
They'd still know they'd been in a scrap, Castine said grimly. I nodded again.
I don't doubt the fighting spirit of anyone in the regiment, but if we stand and fight now, we will all die. That's a plain, simple fact. They'll overrun us in a matter of hours, more like minutes if the ones I'd seen before were anything to go by. But if I told her that, she'd never believe me. And that's just the start.
The portal, Castine said, the coin dropping. I nodded again.
Hundreds of thousands of them would be let loose on the galaxy. We simply can't allow that to happen.
I paused for a moment, letting the implications sink in.
We have to call in the Navy to sterilize the whole site from orbit. It's the only way to make sure.
You can't do that,
Prike and Ernov both shouted at the same time, then broke off to boggle at one another, completely taken aback to find themselves in agreement for once. "I can and will," I contradicted them. "This facility is under martial law, which means the Commissariat is the final arbiter of what can or cannot be done."
"Have you any idea of the economic value of this installation?" Prike asked, recovering first.
"None at all, and I care even less," I said. "So far as I'm concerned, it's not worth the life of one soldier." The soldier I had in mind being me, of course. "But the Archaeotech," Ernov spluttered. Think of the knowledge, the spiritual advancement of mankind that you'd be sacrificing. All we'd be sacrificing if we left that tomb intact is our lives," I rejoined. "Not to mention the millions of others who'd be slaughtered if the Necrons down there revive and escape through the portal."
"But they're in stasis," the Magos persisted. "While they're dormant, we can safely examine."
"We don't know that," Castine cut in. "For all we know, they're up and about by now, and even if they aren't, their friends could be flocking through the portal from somewhere else. We simply can't risk sending anyone back down there, and that's final."
"On the contrary," Ernolf replied. "I don't think you can risk not sending anyone back."
"Explain," Castine said, although in a sudden agony of panic, I realised what the Magos was driving at. The worst of it was that he was right, damn it, and the spasming of my bowels told me who was by far the most likely candidate to get stuck with the job.
"You said it yourself," he said triumphantly. "The portal's still active. Even if you called in your naval strike, it would be left intact and functioning for months before a flotilla could get here, possibly even years. The Necrons would be long gone."
"Emperor's bowels, he's right." Brocklaw looked more shaken than I'd ever seen him. "We have to blow the portal before we pull out." I felt every pair of eyes at the table lock onto me like the targeting auspex of a Hydra battery. The air grew tense with expectation, while my mind whirled frantically, trying to find some plausible reason why this was a truly terrible idea. But inspiration had, for once, deserted me. At length, I nodded, my mouth dry. "I can't see any alternative."
"Neither can I."
Castine turned to me, solemnly pronouncing what I truly believed to be my death sentence. "Can you lead a team back down to the tomb, Commissar?"